Hey guys, welcome to the Days in the Wild podcast, formerly Interviews with the Hunting Masters. Yep, we changed the name, but not the format, nothing like that. Everything's going to stay the same and try to keep it as streamlined as possible, bring you the same type of content. I'm open for suggestions, so if anybody wants to send me or drop me a line. You know, most of these podcasts come about from questions that are generated by you. So please keep those questions coming and we'll get them answered. The official changeover will be April 1st. Put that on your calendar, please, April 1st, because you may need to go in and resubscribe to the show depending on the platform that you're in. So keep that in mind. Interviews with the Hunting Masters, it's on that URL now. It's going to change over Days in the Wild, and there is a slight possibility that you may need to resubscribe. So, April 1st, keep that in mind. So, before we roll into this next episode, I want to talk to you a little bit about conservation and some of the things that we can be doing out there. A woman actually asked me today, she's on Instagram, she was like, how... You know, I'm not trying to be sly or try to be whatever. She said, I just want to know what it is you get out of hunting. Why do you hunt? Educating the non-hunting public about why you do what you do, the benefits of hunting, talk to them about the North American model of conservation and the Pittman-Robinson Act, all that stuff. Educate yourself first, you know, so you don't sound like a dum-dum like I do often. And really, you know, arm yourself with the tools to educate people on the benefits and what we do and why. Because I can't tell you how many times I talk to people and they just automatically assume that their tax dollars is what funds, you know, their income tax or their property tax or whatever, they think it funds conservation and it doesn't. So educate yourself, arm yourself with those and be ready to, you know, educate the non-hunting public. And another thing I want you guys to go, if you're not already a member of, you know, Mule Deer Foundation, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, stuff like that, get involved. The Mule Deer Foundation is awesome. We just got back from the Hunt Expo. They do a lot of excellent stuff out there. Go to muledeer.org and become a member. If you're already a member, there's things on the website where you can look up and find other ways to get involved. If you're not a member, become a member. It's super easy. It's a tax write-off. It's helping the end goal. So get on their website, check out the Mule Deer Foundation, go check out Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Wild Sheep Foundation, all these organizations. Get involved as many as you possibly can. You know, I'm not saying if you can't afford it, we understand. Do what you can do. If you could put in some sweat equity, check on their websites and see if they have any programs for you to get involved. Thanks a lot, and let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, formerly Interviews with the Hunting Masters. I'm going to say that for a couple months here because we changed the name just to make everything a little more concise. I'm at the Mule Deer Foundation Hunt Conservation Expo, and we're doing a little one-on-one with Doyle Moss. What's going on, man?
Hey, glad to be here, man.
Yeah, freaking crazy, huh?
This expo is unbelievable. It's so special this time of year to see all the different outfitters and what was killed in 2019, you know, and
there's been some giants going down in the last couple of years. Oh, it's crazy. I feel like everybody's like trying to one up the next guy, you know.
It's definitely that, especially with social media, man. You can really see what's going on, what's getting killed, what's actually alive.
Yeah,
people posting live pictures they probably shouldn't be posting,
right?
But yeah. It's an amazing event, you know, under these guys to give 200, you know, conservation tags away and just to come see these giants.
Oh, yeah.
It's special.
Sure. I used to only I've been coming here for like the last 6 or 7 years, but I always come for like a day and a half.
Yeah.
This is the first time I said, you know what, I'm going to come for the full thing. But I, because I, you know, you have to come to validate your tags.
Right.
So, you know, I usually just fly in Thursday morning and then I would leave Friday night, you know. And so this year I brought my wife with me this time too. But
awesome.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. I never go to any of the banquets or anything, but I'm going to do the full coral luncheon thing,
yeah.
You know, because I put in for those tags this year, or those raffle tickets, rather, I should say.
Yeah, those dinners are pretty special. I mean, you talk about a lot of people that love conservation, mm-hmm. love spending money on conservation, putting money on the ground, flying into Salt Lake City and going
That's
in there
huge.
Middle of the day, and, you know, there's 70 items. The middle of the day auction, and then Friday night and Saturday night at auctions, you're talking about raising millions of dollars for conservation.
Unreal.
So it's pretty special that way. I mean, hunters are, you know, true conservationists, and man, they spend some money.
Oh yeah, I mean,
so it's great.
Without us, it wouldn't be what it is today.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, and I have this conversation with non-hunters all the time. I'm always trying to educate them on how, you know, how it all works. Anyway, before we get too far along, just in case people have been living under a rock here and don't know who Doyle Moss is, or haven't heard of you at least at one point, this is the big buck, big bull killing machine. He's built a giant machine. It's like a freaking empire now, man. It's unreal.
Yeah, we just, you know, it's been a dream. You know, many people told me we couldn't do it, couldn't make it, and just kept going out. I started out, you know, working for some great outfitters when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just keep building, you keep, you know, killing animals, and you gain, you know, positive things. And, you know that, hey, I can kill that deer or I can kill that bull.
Mm-hmm.
And it just builds confidence.
Yeah.
And, you know, from people that told me to go get a real job, you know, I just said, no, this is what I'm going to do. And,
yeah.
You know, it even started out then in the beginning with, you know, because I have some age, but nobody had any videos where actually had animals
right.
in the videos. I mean, they would just, they would sit around a campfire and tell you how their hunting went.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this needs to change. We need to go video live animals, live hunts,
mm-hmm.
you know, walk up to the animal when he just passed away and just, you know, and experience that, and the how jacked up you are, and how excited you are. I'm like, man, we hunted our guts out and finally got him. And so we put that in videos. I mean, we produced, you know, 35 videos, sold through Cabela's and Sportsman's, and it was
I remember those DVDs.
Yeah, it was a huge, huge part of the industry. But now with social media, it's just,
yeah, it's all gone. Stuff has gone away.
It's gone away.
Yeah.
So it was a very special part of the, you know, the life of Mossback, because we would go hunt,
mm-hmm.
we would film, and then after the hunts, we would, you know, put it all together
mm-hmm.
and sell the hunts, you know, sell the videos of what we just
right.
hunted. So it was fun.
Yeah.
So it helped market the company. For sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember when I first started hearing about you guys, like, and then I saw the DVs popping up. And then I started seeing matter of fact, I still have it. It was like a shooting sticks, with
yep.
Mossback shooting sticks.
Yep.
I was like, oh yeah, I bought those because try them out and for coyote hunting and whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been a interesting journey. I've watched, and then you got the photography. Your photography took off too. Is that all just you, or you got other guys doing the photography?
No, it's 100% my photos.
Okay.
I mean, it was something like when the DVDs, you know, kind of crashed, went
right.
to YouTube. I was burnt out with video.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just started snapping pictures.
Yeah.
You know, only 5 or 6 years ago. And I'm like, it just clicked. Then this is what I'm supposed to do now is photograph. And, you know, with technology, with digital cameras, and you have the old film, cause I started out with some of that
right.
way back. And so, you know, it's just special. I mean, you can be able to take a decent picture and you could send it to a hunter, or just there's a whole nother market just for
yeah.
wildlife people that love photography.
Oh yeah,
it's not getting killed.
Exactly.
We've kind of kept it separate.
Yeah, you kind of have to. Yeah, because you can. The hunters will appreciate it, but the non-hunters don't appreciate the other right. side. You know, my dad actually. So my dad's a wildlife photographer as well, and he stopped hunting, man, like 20 years ago. He calls it catch and release hunting now.
Yes.
With his camera.
Yeah.
And he doesn't use the largest lens he uses is 600.
Mm-hmm.
He tries like, he's like, I try to keep it so I have to still stalk in.
Yes.
And you know, whatever. So, but he loves it. He loves it.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal, you know, sport or activity, whatever you right. want to call it. But I mean, the hunting skills totally applies when you got to go
oh, yeah.
try to get a, you know, a picture of an animal and it's right. close. I mean, you use the wind and the, you know, his eyesight, and you just, you know, you're just like you're going to kill it, but you just yep. go ahead and take a picture of it and back out.
Exactly. Catch, release.
Yep.
Nice. So I got you on today because I want to hear, I know with all the hunting that you've done and all the experience you've got, you got probably had a couple of really good stories. I'd love to hear.
Yeah, there's, a, you know, a couple that stand out. You know, it's two or elk, which was some of the most phenomenal experiences. One I go into would be the spider bull. I mean, it's a bull that a good friend of mine sent me a picture of in the summer, mm-hmm. early summer, and I texted him right back. I go, nice ranch bull, and
right.
And it was like, no, there's no ranch bull. I'm like, holy. So I, you know, got a hold of him and found out the mountain range and went up and spent some time and found the bull and looked at him. And, you know, he just continued to grow. And he was in an area where a lot of different chopped up pieces of private property.
Okay.
But he would come out into these open meadows and a lot of people were getting to see him. So there was a lot of hype on him pretty early. After I had photographed him, There was so much pressure on the bull. The bull would he would kind of only come out in the middle of the day.
Okay.
And so one day I was in there and about noon he walked out with a couple of these other bulls and got some video and pictures of him. And I mean, after that I was just like, I just said, dude, that looks like a spider. Let's yeah. call him Spider Bull. And so it just we knew the archery hunt was coming up. Denny Osted, good friend of mine, he had bought the Conservation State elk tag.
Okay.
So our goal was to hunt this bull, you know, obviously it was the biggest bull in the state and mm-hmm. at the time, and, you know, let's just go after him. Denny was able to get a crossbow permit.
Okay.
So we thought about trying to hunt him with a bow, but, I mean, there was so much competition on this bull during the archery hunt.
I bet.
That it just put pressure on the bull. And so we hadn't seen the bull for a long time. It was Denny could start hunting with a rifle September 1st.
Okay.
So he hunted a couple of weeks with a bow, nothing. September 1st, we started hunting with a rifle. And, you know, we'd go out and just kind of hammer areas. And one morning, me and my buddy glassed him up early. And then we seen him later that morning. We kind of knew the direction that this bull was starting to head. And so we kind of keyed in on that area, and there was one night the bull walked out of into a meadow, and I looked at the time on my watch and it was just barely like a minute past legal shooting light, and I wouldn't let Denny kill it. It was just me and Denny by ourselves.
That bull with that much heat on it, yeah. Everybody's waiting for you to trip up and make a mistake. Everybody.
And so we passed it. And then a couple days later, we're getting to where the rifle hunt's going to start, the normal rifle hunt with all the hunters.
Oh, okay.
So a couple days later, we had split up, and I told my good buddy Will and Heather, I says, hey, go down to this point, look back up into this basin, and we'll be down there in a minute. Well, when we pulled up to him, Heather goes, I think there's a bull there with some extras. And we jump out of our side-by-sides real quick and look at him. It was him.
Uh-huh.
And he was in. We didn't know he had cows at the time. We couldn't see any cows. And so I took Denny. We bounced up in there and hunted him a little bit. And no response with the calls. Didn't see him. He'd moved off time we got in there because it was a good hike in there. And we was working back this ridge to the west. And I come you know, just strolling. Denny was about three steps behind me, and I come strolling up over this rise, and spider's right there.
Oh, shit.
About 250 yards looking right at me.
Oh, man.
And so I had Denny, come up, and I just put down my tripod, and I said, he's right there, kill him. I'm like, we are going to kill spider right here. I mean, the rifle main hunt starts the next day. This is the day before. This is our chance to kill this thing. And Denny put his rifle on the tripod and squeezed off like Denny has with me many, many times. And we both watched that vapor trail, that bullet go right over the back of that bull.
Oh my God.
And it was just, it was one of those, we both knew instantly that thing was a no-go. And the bull dove off to the aspens. I mean, there was only one quick shot and it was over with. Dove off to the aspens. I got it on our old Widowmaker cow call and just tore that thing up. And what I didn't see is right after we missed him, there was a bunch of about 20 cows underneath the ledge. That you couldn't even see. It was just
below you.
Yeah. They followed him down in the aspens. And so I got on my Widowmaker and just cranked out a bunch of cow calls. Every one of those cows came back up through the saddle. And I go, just stay on the tripod. I said, you're going to kill this bull right now. You don't have another chance. Every one of those cows came up over the saddle, and he never followed.
Shit.
I mean, of all things, you're just sick about it. And so we all had to leave right then to go on other hunts. I sent Denny back to Idaho. And it was about 2 weeks later, I sent one of my guides down there, Clint Bigelow, and he texted me. He was just out on the Henry's hunting deer. And he goes, I think I seen him. You know, about 80% sure he'd moved like 10 or 15 miles.
Wow.
And it was on cows. So I said, dude, just be back in there the next day. Let's just verify it. And so the next day he went in, and he got video of me.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, perfect. So it was the type of deal that Denny still wasn't feeling very good, but I had my nephew. I talked to Denny. I said, we got the bull. Let's kill him. He goes, I'm not feeling good enough to come on the hunt. I'm like,
what?
So we just got off the Henry's, and I asked my nephew, I go, where are you at, Eric? And he goes, I'm here in Provo. I says, come get me. I says, I'm driving to Idaho right now to get Denny. So I talked Denny to just getting in his truck to drive to the Idaho border.
Uh-huh.
And so I drove up there, met him, jumped in Denny's truck, and I drove him down. We got to this town. Got about an hour's worth of sleep, got up and went in there and met the guide and our other team. I mean, just amazing guides that work for the company. And I said, Clint, I said, let me hear what his bugle sounds like, because I want to be all over him by light, you know, by his bugle. And he turned on the audio of that video, and it was the wimpiest spike calf bugle you've ever heard. I'm like, this is how this bull lived all through the rut.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody went after him.
Nobody would go after that thing.
Yeah.
And so it was just pretty amazing how that, you know, just that little information. So we went in there the dark and heard a few, you know, bugles, but not him. And then the spotters on the ridge, you know, they flagged me over and just say, hey, he's below you. So I took Denny, we just hit this little trail, little road, in there perfect, and come around a corner and spider walked over a little tiny ridge in the aspens, just a few aspens in the sage. It walks over this little rise and starts to let out a bugle, and I just instantly set down my tripod and I said, kill him. And then he goes, which one is he? And I said, it's the only elk you can see, just shoot it. It was kind of a comical moment. And Denny, it was the exact yardage he missed the bull, like,
no shit,
2.5 weeks earlier. And just dropped him.
It was just that big that he looked like two elk standing next to each other?
I don't know. To me, it was just comical. I'm like, there's only one, so we cannot screw this up. Just shoot the only elk you can see.
Yeah.
And so Denny drops him, and it was funny that how alive Denny became after he hit that bull and it dropped it. And I go walking up there to the bull, and he instantly gets on the phone with Randy Brooks of Barnes Bullets and said, hey, your bullet just killed the biggest bull in the world, you know, blah, 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 spider bull and all this stuff. And so I get up to the bull, and I'm like, Denny, get up here and check the bull. Yeah. I mean, we've hunted this bull for, you know, over a month easy.
Yeah.
Like nonstop. Somebody's always kind of looking. And so we get up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally have to walk down the hill. I said, Denny, get off the phone.
Yeah.
Let's get up here and check this bull. Make sure that he's dead. And then he was dead. And it was just game on. And the whole team got together there and just celebrated. I mean, it was the greatest.
Oh, I can imagine.
Oh, it was just such an amazing feeling. I think I had tears in my eyes. I mean, because we'd hunted that bull so hard, and the competition.
Of course.
That was after him, and all the things we had to go with all the other hunters. Like, we were cheating and all this stuff. I'm like, we're hunting just like you guys.
Yeah.
And so it was pretty special. I mean, the more comical thing is we walked right by a muzzleloader elk camp right when we went in.
Oh, no
and
shit.
Killed him probably 400 or 500 yards from their camp.
Really?
Yeah. So it's...
I forgot. What did he score?
I scored him right there on the green, like 501.
Okay.
And Boone and Crocker, when they scored him, they came up with 499 and change. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was within an inch and a half or so of him.
Yeah.
Green scored, and SCI scored him at 508, officially world record. So he's world record SCI, and Boone and Crockett, you know, nice. Fair chase. So, but it was just one of those things. I mean, it's not like you just pulled up and shot and, you know, and there, you know, all the rumors, you know, we brought him from Canada. Or
oh my God. I heard that story like five times. I'm like, you kept him in a trailer or something like that. I was like, come on.
I mean,
how
everybody else
is that. That's
everybody else is, you know, taking pictures of him. Like, he's a wild bull, just like anything else. He just, you know, you know. And when we got to the Ogdens down there in Richfield at the taxidermy shop, I mean, there were so many fishing games. I mean, the parking lot was just plastered. I mean, and fishing game come and tested him DNA right there and took. Looked at his lips, his ears, like he had all these tags in him. I'm like, good luck, man. This thing is wild as they get.
Yeah.
And then it was a party in the whole city that night about this spider bull getting killed. It was a legend. It was just amazing. It was very special to be a part of it.
For sure. I was just actually having that conversation with Chad out front, how jealousy, how people, like, they see you get things done, like, year in, year out. You're always killing big this, big that, or even myself. I don't kill big shit. I kill a lot of medium-sized, small-sized stuff, but I fill my tags often. And people, there's jealousy out there, so they start spreading rumors about you. They start, like, it's what it is they, like, you can't possibly be doing that because I can't do that, so you got to be cheating. You got to be doing something wrong. Right? They, like
12 helicopters, that's what helps, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Is that I never heard that one.
Oh yeah.
I know, I heard you had a team of 20 guys out there, but I've heard the keeping the bull in the trailer for a couple months and then letting it out.
I mean, it's pretty amazing what you do here. I mean, it's like on anybody's hunt. Yeah, you might. I mean, I think we had 5 people there.
Yeah.
6 people when we killed spider bull.
Right.
I mean, and anybody else that draws a tag, they have 10 to 15. What is the difference?
Exactly.
You know, I pay my people. They don't. Shit. They just use their people.
In Arizona now, it's like every time a guy gets a freaking elk tag, you know, especially on those late rifle seasons. Oh, my God, man. Between the 500 tags that freaking Fishing Game is putting in the damn unit now, plus
all
5 other
guys.
Oh, my God. I mean, I guess I can't talk either. So my nephew had a late rifle tag this year, and there was 5 of us. But he's a 13-year-old kid, you know. It's like you kind of need that much help.
Sure, sure.
Especially if we kill one, you want to pack it out and whatever. But still,
I didn't think people would be that, you know, critical of it. But they watch everything.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they just
because they can't do it themselves.
Right.
You must be doing something wrong.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of people that kill one great animal in their life. You know.
Yeah.
But when you continually do it year after year, mm-hmm. I'm just like, there is something special about Mossback and the team and, you know, the mental. It's no different than New England Patriots.
Right.
Why do they win all the time?
Yeah. You got a system in place and it worked.
But, yeah, I mean, and you know, there's a lot of young kids that have come through the company or, you know, and or see how we do it, and they have those same goals. I mean, that's the, you know, Utah, Arizona, especially Utah. I mean, I mean, they see what Mossbeck did, and like, hey, and I tell anybody, hey, I was told I couldn't do it.
Right.
You wanted to go do this. You want to work everything. You want to sacrifice your family, sacrifice starving for years and years and years. You can do it.
Right.
I mean, but it just takes a lot of sacrifice, and you're not. Mossbeck has never been about the money. I mean, everybody thinks we're all this rich. I'm like, rich? I mean, we deal with most expensive hunters in the world, probably.
Right.
But we're not rich. We just charge them a guide fee.
Right.
A lot of times just a daily fee to be out there to cover our expenses. So, I mean, it's like, well, one, they might spend a lot of money on the tag, but that's just where it starts. I mean,
right.
It costs to for us to go out.
You got
to
spend a month hunt. I mean, come
right.
on.
Right.
Month hunting and five guys, that's a lot of you got to pay. There's a lot of mouths you got to feed, a lot of gas you got to put out. I mean, people don't never understood that. Like, I got in Arizona, you know, real small boutique. Take out a few guys here, a few guys there, and like people are always like, well, why does it cost $4,500 to go shoot a coos deer? I'm like, well, I mean, I gotta feed you for 5 days. I got how many miles in my truck? Gas. It's me and another guy. Gotta pay somebody to eat. I mean, come on, you gotta think about it. Start adding all that stuff. Do it yourself. Go on. I travel all over the country to go hunt myself. I was just telling my wife this. I'm like, I did the math. I'm like, if I go on an elk hunt, on an over-the-counter elk hunt in like Oregon or something, it still costs me like $4,000.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was talking to the guys at the Halupai. They got that $5,000 management hunt. I'm like, I might just do that.
Right. You know,
what the hell? The fuck? And it's in my home state.
In your backyard.
I just drive up there and I'm like, I might just do that.
Right.
It's going to cost me almost as much as what to say I went on a DIY.
Right. That's what's amazing is some people have a hard time saying they use the guide. Or this is the way it is. It's like a hardcore guy, he draws a tag. I'm not going to use a guide, but I'm going to call the 10 best guides I know.
And ask them.
And ask them, where do I go? And just whore them out. You're just like, you know, and we love helping. We give so much free information. It's
pathetic.
Trust me,
I'm like a revolving door of information.
Yeah. I mean, you want them to be successful. You want to help them out, and we do it for a lot free. But they got to realize it's like this is our full time job,
right?
You know.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's nothing personal. But we do give a lot of, you know. Or if we run into somebody and they're having struggle and say, "Hey, I haven't seen a 320 bull. I'll kill a 320 bull." And like, well, just walk around the corner. There's one there, and you know, let him go kill it. And so, you know, we help so much free stuff, but. It's like I said, it's never been about the money. Yeah, we got to survive, but it's the love of this hunt and the love of killing state records.
Yeah.
I mean, state record after state record. I mean, from, you know, Utah's to Nevada's to California's. I mean, we love hunting the biggest and best. I mean, it's just, you got to have some kind of challenge because you've, you know, killed so much other big stuff. It just,
at that point, it's like, you know, where do you go? Where do you go from there? Yeah. For sure. The whole thing about guys having a hard time telling they went with a guide, that's all because since social media.
Right.
It's because of the shaming.
If there wasn't social media, this whole thing would be different. There'd be probably a lot less outfitters.
There would be.
But it's just like, you know, someone will, you know, say, hey, can you help me here? But, you know, I don't want your logo on it. I'm like, well, that's my marketing.
Right. Yeah.
you know, at least give me the logo.
Right.
You know, because I want something out of it. But
yeah,
it's a, well, you know, they don't want, and it is funny. Even today, you'll have, I'll book a guy and he go, you know, come and hunt with him. And he goes, oh my gosh, it was so different than what I heard about you guys.
Yeah.
You know, like. You know, it was just a phenomenal experience. I mean, you just got to come experience the type of hunting, how we do it. Mm-hmm. It's all going to be ethical. We're going to be the most stand-up guides on the mountain.
You also got the biggest microphone, you know, biggest glass on you. Everybody's looking at you, you know. So you got to be. You have to be, without a doubt. And, you know, I get that a lot, too, like, again, so we don't kill it, and nowhere near the trophy quality you guys do. But a guy comes, even like for a javelina hunt, they come, whatever, and they got this wild expectation of like, it's gonna, they're gonna walk out and shoot a deer or shoot a javelina or shoot a deer, whatever, and they're gonna, you know, they don't understand that you as a guide, you're out there, you're getting paid for the word guide. You're guiding them to that animal that they're looking for. And they got, and they have to be proficient shooters. They have to, you know, have to be in shape. They have to, you know, all that stuff is on them. There's still so much more that's on the hunter. It's not a gimme. If you have a guide, it's not a gimme that you're going
to. Absolutely not.
I mean, your buddy missed at 250 yards on a freaking ginormous bull the first time. Luckily, he had you as a guide to find him again. But, you know, 15 miles later.
Yeah.
Or, you know, away, whatever. But, yeah. No, it's funny. I wish there was a way, and I guess if guys like myself and other podcasters and other people in the media start talking about it more to break the stigma down, mm-hmm. I think it'll make, because I can't tell you how many, everybody calls me, oh, do you have a semi-guided? Do you have a semi-guided? Not in Arizona, I don't. I do in South Dakota, I have a semi-guided hunt. It's the only place I do it because it's on private land and I can control it. But, you know, you give a guy a semi-guided hunt, guy who's ambitious about that, he's just going to show up in your spot next year
exactly.
for free.
It's yeah. tough when you guide 80% on public lands.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, we're lucky with the hunters that, I mean, very blessed. I mean, yeah. these guys are awesome. Their loyalty is phenomenal. We probably have 80% return clientele every year. I mean, they just say, hey, this is my budget. This is what I want. And we go to all these auctions mm-hmm. and buy the tags they want. And so it's and then some of the most successful people in the world. This is the big kicker. Mm-hmm. If you're researching Mossback, do you think these type of people are going to jeopardize their whole life by going with a renegade outfitter that,
no.
you know, it's yeah. just think about it. But it's funny. And you can read some really fancy stuff about Mossback on the internet about, you know, but, you know, blocking roads and stuff. I'm like, you know, number one, speed dial from the Fish and Game or Forest Service or BLM. I mean, if they have a problem, they call me and say, hey, was your guys here or there? Or take a picture. Yeah. Take a picture. I mean, who doesn't have a phone right now? Yeah. Take a picture of one of my guides is doing something, because they're going to get a talking to if there's any problems, if there's any altercations, or if somebody's blocking the road, they're gone. Yeah. Fired so freaking fast.
You're not the only one. Everybody that I know that's got success that's anywhere near
right.
what you got, like my buddy Greg Krogh.
Sure.
He deals with that shit all the time. Like, we were just talking about that not too long ago. He's like, man, he's like, I was 4 units away.
Yeah.
I was 2.5 hours away. It's like, yeah. I don't know.
Greg, you know, Greg's in that upper class, one of the greatest guides there is. And so you're going to take it. I mean, you know how many times my guides call me and say, hey, you're answering your phone. I'm like, yeah. And like, well, I heard you're in jail right now. You know, I'm just like, no, all good here.
Oh, jeez.
So it's just funny, but. It's a, you know, it's a jealousy industry.
It is.
But
because it's a chest beating sport.
Right.
It's like, really look at me, look what I did. You know, that's what it is. And I mean, we're all that way a little bit, you know, to otherwise we kind of wouldn't be into it where we want the, you know.
Sure. And it drives people to become better.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's like probably NFL or basketball or baseball. If there wasn't millions of people watching them, they probably wouldn't try as hard.
No.
They probably wouldn't do as great of things or make that fancy catch or be the greatest.
Yeah. But I mean, you got to have some extra, you know.
But it's like anything. You want to be tested. You want to know that I'm to a point, there is not a mule deer alive that can get away from me. I mean, you want to be that point. Or an elk. Just say, this thing is dead.
Right.
You know. But if you don't have that mentality, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's going to get away from you.
For sure. Well, awesome, man. I want to thank you for taking the time out.
You bet, man.
Coming on and talking with us. I've been trying to pin you down for a little bit, but we finally got you on.
Yes, it's a pleasure. I'm glad you came to check out the expo and run by the Mossback booth.
It's an incredible booth, man.
Thanks, man. Congrats on all your success, man. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Just keep it up.
I try.
Thanks. All right.
Thank you.